It's just raw political power, and I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. But clearly, they have a history. Republicans have a history or a perception that they have pushed the limits of redistricting, so to speak. And so, there's going to be a lot more scrutiny on any sort of maps that come out of these two chambers.
Ahead on the WUNC Politics Podcast, we begin to pick up the pieces, breaking down some of the 2020 election results. I'm Jeff Tiberi. November 3rd, 2020 in North Carolina proved to be a largely red night with some flashes of blue. Donald Trump is expected to carry the state. Tom Tillis appears destined for another 6 years in the Senate. Results still unofficial. Republicans will maintain majorities at the General Assembly. That has major implications for redistricting and control over policy for the next decade. And the GOP did well in judicial races, sweeping 5 North Carolina Court of Appeals contests and picking up either 2 or 3 state Supreme Court seats. Democrats were able to hang on to the governor's mansion, we think the attorney general's seat, and pick up 2 spots in the U.S. House. In our state, despite hundreds of millions of dollars spent and relentless advertisements, this all amounts to something of a status quo election. In a moment, Associated Press State House reporter Gary Robertson offers some analysis. First, a brief check-in with Meredith College political science professor David McLennan. He also runs the Meredith College poll, and you may remember him from a podcast episode last month that was all about polling. I wanted to check in with the professor for an initial assessment of how he thought the polls did here in 2020.
You know, so I think the polls, despite what the national press has talked about, you know, there were some misses around the country, Florida and places like that. But North Carolina looked like the diversity of polls that were conducted in North Carolina by state-run polling organizations, as well as those outside the state, I think that really helped North Carolina have an accurate snapshot of how close the race was going to be.
Reminder, the presidential and U.S. Senate races in North Carolina were toss-ups, according to the polls, heading into the home stretch. And state legislative races lack reliable public polling. McLennan noted the biggest miss for pollsters was the governor's race. Democrat Roy Cooper was ahead in many polls by high single digits and ultimately won his race by only about 4.5 percentage points. And it was a good year for governors. There were only 11 gubernatorial races across the country, so it's a small sample size. But no incumbents lost, and only one state, Montana, will see a change in party power.
And so my read on it is that governors, since they have a lot of direct responsibility for the pandemic response, they were given credit for their work. And whether it was a Republican-led state or a Democratic-led state like North Carolina, the governor's pandemic response seemed to be the crucial issue in terms of his electoral success. Now, it didn't translate down ballot for many other Democrats.
2020, along with everything else that has and is playing out, will go down as yet another ticket-splitting election in North Carolina. For the 7th time since 1980, voters sent a Republican to the White House and a Democrat to the executive mansion.
You know, what it tells us is that North Carolinians are more independent than even voters in other states. That governors, we've had a long history of Democratic governors in the state, with only 2 exceptions in modern political history. Yet, only President Obama in 2008 won the state of North Carolina as a Democratic candidate. So, you know, this has got a long, deep history in North Carolina, and I think they look at the presidency differently than they look at the governorship. And they, you know, ask questions about the governor that may be different from the questions they ask about the presidency. For a lot of non-North Carolinians, it seems like we're a very confused state. But in reality, we're following our political history very carefully. I tell people that since 1950, we've had 7 Republican U.S. senators and 6 Democratic U.S. senators.
David McLennan, director of the Meredith College poll and a political science professor, can be found on Twitter at David B. McLennan. For some additional context, we turn our ears now to Gary Robertson. In pre-COVID times, we share a wall in the bowels of the legislature, but for this chat, we convened via Zoom, me from my now usual closet studio at home, Gary from his bunker on West Jones Street. And to get us going, I asked him what surprised him, if anything, from last Tuesday.
I guess I was a little surprised by the closeness of the Cooper Forest race, and maybe it was a reflection of just me seeing too many polls showing him up high single digits, maybe even 10 points. I mean, I think you and I have talked in the past that North Carolina seems to have polling that if you look at it, you add maybe a couple percentage points for the Republicans for whatever reason, and that's generally where you have been. But, and you know, also just the maybe the Republicans sweeping the courts, the appeals courts, and the Supreme, well, two or three of the Supreme Court seats that were up, they were all basically 51-49, 51-52-48, except for the one we may be talking about between Associate Justice Newby and Chief Justice Beasley, which could change before we even have this recording go out into the Ethernet.
So, still uncertified, it's an unofficial result that that contest between Associate Justice Paul Newby, Chief Justice Sherry Beasley, as you and I chat on this Monday afternoon, the difference is presently 2,623 votes between them. We expect that to change or move, potentially to get closer. As a reminder, if it's inside of 10,000 votes, it can be there would be a recount if Beasley were to request one.
It's whoever is the trailing candidate,
right? Okay.
Who gets the opportunity to call for what would just be a machine recount at first. And machine recounts historically have resulted in few changes to an outcome.
It would seem to me the most notable victory for a Democrat here in North Carolina is Roy Cooper getting a second term. After that, for my money, it's probably Attorney General Josh Stein. Worth noting that he's up less than 12,000 votes as you and I have this conversation. After Cooper, what's the most notable Democratic win from last week from your perspective, Gary?
Well, I think what's notable is not something that was debatable, basically, that there were going to be two more members of Congress who are Democrats, where you have Deborah Ross in the second, and then you have Kathy Manning in the sixth, and for your longtime listeners, they know that redistricting dramatically changed those districts so that both George Holding and Mark Walker chose not to run this time around. That was probably something that had been in place for a year after the congressional maps were redrawn. So that's significant for them.
So sticking with the state Supreme Court balance, I'm interested to get you or to try to nudge you to speculate a little bit, because this, of course, a year that ends in a zero. We had a census. Next year is a year that ends in a one. We have redistricting. You just mentioned those two additional Democratic members of the congressional delegation from North Carolina. That was largely, if not entirely, born out of a panel of three state judges that blocked legislative districts. And in turn, there was a legal filing over congressional districts a little bit more than a year ago. The state Supreme Court is going to go from 6-1 Democrat control to either 5-2 or perhaps 4-3. As we think about redistricting and we think about what feels like inevitable court challenges, now likely, more likely along partisan lines, do you have an expectation? Do you have a thought? It's certainly early, but what are you thinking about as we get ready for redistricting in the spring?
Well, first of all, there won't be a redraw in the spring. The fact that the census figures have been delayed this year means that North Carolina won't get the data that they need until later in the year. And so it's my understanding that maps probably won't be drawn until late summer or early fall. Now, as it relates to the state Supreme Court, sure, if it's a 5-2 Democratic majority or a 4-3 Democratic majority, potentially that could help Republicans who draw the maps maybe have a better chance of having them upheld. But as you know, you can also go to federal court to sue under particular parts of the Constitution or the Civil Rights Act. So there are many avenues by which litigation could challenge these, whatever these maps are. You know, House Speaker Tim Moore and Senate Leader Phil Berger talked to them last week, and I asked them about whether they thought that they would follow kind of the model that they used in 2019 when they had to redraw legislative and congressional maps, and they seemed to indicate that they appreciated that, which was more of a more transparent process. And I probably said this in the past. I mean, the reason why you want to be in the majority is because you want the power. I mean, it's just raw political power, and I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. But clearly, they have a history. Republicans have a history or a perception that they have pushed the limits of redistricting, so to speak. And so, there's going to be a lot more scrutiny on any sort of maps that come out of these two chambers.
You and I had conversations, and you reminded me of this before I hit record here this afternoon. You and I had conversations 10, 11, 15 months ago as we began to kind of conceptualize the 2020 election. And we talked about the prospect of this perhaps being a status quo election, of the executive mansion holding, of Republicans holding majorities. And that is effectively, from a state governance perspective, what happened. Republicans have picked up some seats in the North Carolina House. They have the Democrats netted one in the state Senate. But this is to say simple majorities continue. There will not be super majorities. The governor will be able to maintain a veto. Status quo. So as we think about when we step beyond redistricting to think about fights over the budget, will there be a budget? We think about Medicaid expansion. Will there be any traction for Medicaid expansion? Those are the two big ones. So let's start there. This being a status quo election, what do you think is going to change, or is nothing going to change?
So on expansion, I get a sense that particularly, I think they'll wait to see what the Supreme Court does on whether the ACA will stay intact. So that might push down, I think there could be an excuse, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but a credible excuse saying, let's wait until the Supreme Court rules on this before we act. But when you see the numbers, there isn't really much difference. And I think even with potentially 69 seats in the North Carolina House, I mean, you need three more to override a veto. Given, I'm not really sure where you find a three additional Democrats, because the days of conservative Democrats have kind of gone away. I'm sure somebody's going to call and say, oh, wait, you forgot so-and-so and so-and-so. But unlike 2011, where a similar situation happened, Republicans were able to override Governor Perdue's vetoes because they found conservative Democrats. That's just not as easy as it was a decade ago.
As a reminder to listeners, we are about, what are we now? 12 plus 5, we're 16, 17 months past the most recently enacted new state budget. So we don't have a state budget, and there's nothing mandating state lawmakers and the governor come together and reach some kind of compromise to do it next summer. So do you think we're going to get a state budget next summer, a new one?
2019 was the vast exception to the rule. I'd never seen that happen, and I've been covering this place off and on since 1995. And so I think it would be more likely than not that they will come to agreements, realizing that having no budget is bad publicity. If they say, I will not go forward on budget unless there's expansion, or I will not go forward on a budget unless there's a tax cut, who's to say we wouldn't continue at that? I just think there may be definitely some negativity to have that two cycles in a row.
No one wants to hear the next words that come out of my mouth, but we are less than a year and a half from a primary, or just about a year and a half from a primary in North Carolina. And interestingly, that will include an open U.S. Senate seat, because North Carolina's senior U.S. Senator, Republican Richard Burr, has indicated he will not run for another six-year term. An open Senate seat is going to bring in all kinds of money, all kinds of attention, perhaps not the $300 million or more that we just saw at the Tillis Cunningham race, but it's going to be an expensive seat because it'll be an in-play seat to some degree.
Who's there? Who's in that race? Who do you think we might see in that race? What's the early vision on 2022?
Well, I mean, I haven't talked to any of these people, but you know, our history tells us that outgoing Congressman Mark Walker has discussed that, and I think he's enjoyed being in Washington, and he has a base of support even statewide. As we remember, he was considering challenging Tom Tillis in a primary in early 2020, and he did not, but he has certainly made that known that that's something that he would be considering. We'll have to hear about Pat McCrory. He was on television, I think, on election night with WRAL, and it didn't seem like that he was going to commit one way or another to that and still thinking about it. But I also know that he is doing pretty well with his Charlotte radio show. So on that Republican side, and then the Democrats, the names that have come up in the past. You know, we have Jeff Jackson, the state senator. And then we have,
we have Anthony Fox, the former.
Yes, Anthony Fox, the former Charlotte mayor and transportation chief. And I think Erica Smith, who will be galvanized by one of her political idols, Stacey Abrams, in Georgia, who is getting a lot of attention for that state becoming incredibly competitive, if not supporting Biden over Trump when it's all said and done. So I think that she, will be a force that I'll be taking a look at. And, I think the question will be how much, whether she can raise money, which was a drawback for her in her race with Cal Cunningham earlier this year.
Two quick ones to get you out of here on. First one, will Cal Cunningham ever run for public office again?
Well, I think if it's just mainly on the fact that he's lost twice in 2010 and 2020, it's going to be hard for him to maybe get a base of supporters that would go for him for another statewide race. You know, and clearly what has transpired in the last 5 or 6 weeks related to his personal life will, I'm sure there is a lot of, and I talked to some very angry supporters. And if that's extrapolated out, it may be difficult in a head-to-head race with another Democrat. It's going to be hard for him to – it seems like it's going to be hard for him to come back.
Yeah. Second, finally, on a much lighter note, where are you going here in the next 2 or 3 weeks or month when you – what are you going to do to find that respite, that 2020 respite? It's hard in the pandemic, but I assume you're going to do something to unplug here in the days or weeks ahead.
Well, I guess, I've got some projects at home. I've been, as you know, I have a lot of baseball cards and I need to start looking through them. And, I'm getting to the age where keeping them in the house, it's harder to justify and, figuring out which ones I want to keep. As you know, It was an exciting 2019 for me with sports, particularly with the Nationals winning. And I really have, 2020, I've just not really been as involved in sports. I just hasn't really caught my attention. So, maybe it'll just be good to, get a good book. I'm still waiting for that that Robert Caro biography on LBJ, the last section. I don't know when that's ever going to come out, but that might be years, but something like that. That it's hard to believe that would actually that might help me unwind. But it's nice to it's nice to just watch something else on TV besides the political ads.
Yes,
and maybe there's a couple binging of TV episodes that I need to be my wife and I need to watch.
We'll leave it there. Thank you as always for coming on the podcast.
Glad to be on.
I call Gary the mayor of the Capitol Press Corps. You can find the longtime AP Statehouse reporter on Twitter at Gary D. Robertson. I'm at J_TIBS. As usual, we'll convene again on Friday for a review of some of what happened in state politics. Until then, thanks for listening.